Snack Bar Games Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 239. I am Andrew, not Graham. I should have said I am
Graham. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll say, why are they still recording this? Why didn't they start over? I'm in New York. Andrew is not Graham. I am Graham.
I can be Graham. I could try to be Graham.
So, Graham, tell us about New York Comic Con.
It's pretty awesome. There's a lot of people in costumes and cosplay, and I'm scared. Not really. Okay, so yeah, I'm filling in for Graham this week. He's at New York Comic Con, or he was at New York Comic Con this past week, and we're recording this. But we will carry on anyway without him. I'm sure he will appreciate our hard work here today. I'm here with Jeff, Sean, Henry, and Brad, returning after not being on a podcast in a while.
Welcome. Yeah, Brad. Woo!
Special edition when I show up. This is my second one.
Yeah. All right, so this is a pretty big week for games, don't you think? Crazy.
Lots of games.
Like it's weird
and
that we
good games.
Yes, good games. Actual good games to play. Like these past few months have been, had a few good games here and there, but generally they've been pretty not very crowded, but it's good that we're finally back the swing of things.
It's fall now.
Yes, it is. It is officially fall. If it wasn't fall last week, it is fall this week. So we're not going to have a main topic this week. We're just going to be talking about games, and more games. But before we do that, let's jump to news. Sean, news.
Well, I think probably the biggest news is something most people have probably heard by now, but Cliffy B is leaving Epic Games.
Yes, I think as of a few days ago, he tweeted that it was his last day at Epic. So that just unlike when Ray and Greg left BioWare, which I think when that happened, not many people were too surprised by that. But
no, I think most people expected that when they were bought by EA.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like Cliffy B is kind of like the face and voice of Epic, and it's just weird that he's not going to be there anymore. I mean, he's been in the industry for what, like 20 years? I think he's been at that company basically since their humble beginnings. But
yeah, this is very common though. I mean, anytime the company becomes very successful from small beginnings and they make a huge amount of money, like Cliffy B did, and you get the end of sort of his baby, which was the Gears of War trilogy.
Yeah,
it's probably you'll see this very often where they'll go on and start and they want to try something new or they'll start up their own thing. They need that challenge. Once they're the kind of guys that are driven all the time, and when you get to that point where you're so successful and they sold tens of millions of copies with the three Gears of Wars, he's gonna be like, okay, well, what now? And I think for him, we'll see him start up something or get involved in mobile, or we'll see him. I doubt he'll sort of stay out of the picture.
Oh no, definitely not. I think he's probably gonna take I guess maybe a year or so off. We'll probably hear from him every now and again saying, hey, I have big plans, but I'm not gonna tell you. And then finally he will announce those plans, and I'm sure they will be exciting no matter what they are.
Next thing you know, he'll be working for Bungie.
No, this is what's going to happen. He's gonna go over to BioWare, and then Ray and Greg will come back and work at Epic.
Wow.
Yep.
That would be epic.
Yeah. I can't say anything related to BioWare or BioWare puns, so I'm just going to move on. So kind of crazy that it happened. I think Gears of War Judgment, I mean, that game isn't really being developed by the main Epic team. It's being developed by People Can Fly. So I don't think he had much involvement in that to begin with, outside of maybe initial, pre-production stuff. But it'll be curious to see how that game actually turns out without, a lot of the big wigs at Epic, helming it. So
anytime a big wig leaves, I know that they don't have a direct impact on things like coding and art direction and things like that. Like, it's true, they're not the ones actually doing the work. But anytime you get the head of a company, especially a sort of a figurehead that does a lot more than a figurehead does, like Cliffy B, you will see a difference in the quality of the products. It's almost inevitable that it's going to happen. I'm sure I'm not saying it's going to be bad, but it will be different.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It just will. Any good organization has a good, you know, it stems from the top. So I can't see it not affecting the quality of their game.
I mean, I'm still interested in it. I can't say I'm excited. Like, Gears of War 3 just came out a year ago. I love that game, but I mean, I kind of was like, all right, this is it for Gears. We maybe see one more game by the end of the generation, but it won't be for another couple of years. But here we are again, almost, I think it's launching in March, if I believe, that's correct. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. I mean,
Andrew, I really liked Gears 3 too. I found 2 to be a significant improvement over 1. 3, not as much. I still really enjoyed it. But do you think there's still room for the Gears franchise to grow? Is there still uncharted territory?
I think it's kind of running into the problem that I think Halo, a lot of people had with Halo 4 at first, is that it's kind of like, oh, we're going to be facing, you know, the Locust again, even though in Gears 3 we defeated them. This is going to be a prequel, so it's kind of... I consider this maybe the Halo Reach of the Gears series, if I'm going to continue that comparison. So when people started seeing Halo 4, it was like, oh, it's the Covenant again. And then, of course, the new enemies started coming up. So there still could be surprises with Judgment, but it seems like if this is really... It really is just a full-on prequel to the trilogy, then I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they could do. It'll be cool. You know, we have, you know, Baird and... Probably Cole being our main leads, so it'll be from a different perspective. But I don't know what they could do outside of multiplayer stuff, which I'm sure will be great. But like, I don't love
the idea of prequels. I think something has to be really good for a prequel to work for me.
There has to be a good story, and I don't think there's much else in the Gears universe that hasn't already been covered that. Isn't, you know, the future of that franchise, you know, anything going back to the past, you know, anytime before as anytime after between Emergence Day, which is the big event that where all the Locusts come out and attack, you know, everyone, and mm-hmm. Gears 1, it's kind of like there's kind of this weird middle ground where there's clearly stuff that happens, but it's not nearly as interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it would be as important to the storyline as any of the Gears games were.
No, definitely not.
It can't be because there's no tension. If you're Cole and Baird, you know during a cutscene if they're in danger, they can't die because it's a prequel, unless they're going to throw some wacky thing like, oh, the ones you played them were actually cyborgs or something good like that.
You know what? If they weren't completely off the rails, I would actually be excited about that. This is all virtual reality. This is all a dream. Actually, no, that'd be lame. But you know what I mean? Like just something so stupid. It doesn't really fit in with the canon, but it would just be a ridiculous story anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that turns out because I mean, I'm not super excited about it, but I probably will play it anyway because you know, Gears, man, Gears is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. What else is happening?
All right. Well, Capcom has announced that pretty much the only big thing that came out at New York Comic Con, games related, was that Darkstalkers Resurrection is going to be arriving next year.
Yes, Darkstalkers Resurrection, which contains the second and third Darkstalkers game, basically the ones that people care about the most.
Right.
And
right.
It'll be coming out from Iron Galaxy's handling the port, which they're the guys who did the Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Online Edition or whatever that was called, which was a great version. It had all those, you know, all those challenges and stuff, and it, you know, pretty great online and everything. So I think if they're handling this, then I think it'll turn out okay. I mean, but I the thing is with me, I don't have very much experience with Darkstalkers. Does anyone else have you know, a lot of love for the series?
It's a fighting series, right?
Yes.
No.
The hope is that with them bringing this out is that maybe there'll be a new title that they'll make. I mean, I don't think they've made one since 2005 or 2004, maybe. So just kind of giving the franchise like a little bit of a kick here is pretty promising. Pretty cool news. I like the Capcom ports. With these, I think the net play was good. Street Fighter 3 was awesome, possibly probably the best one. So pretty exciting news. A couple of guys that I play online with are big Darkstalkers fans. So this is definitely one that I'll probably be picking up.
Yeah, I think I'll check it out too because I've always been like I've played some of the series, but I never really got into it. And I think even though I'm not a huge fighting game person, I think it'll be fun to go back to those games and see how they hold up. And I just think it's cool. It's like you said. we could see another Darkstalkers game after, if this is successful. Like, we could see the series brought back the same way Street Fighter was brought back for Street Fighter 4. And I think that's what Ono wants to do. The guy who's, you know, he has a huge amount of love for the Darkstalkers franchise, and clearly he wants to make this happen. But first, it's kind of like, well, it's not that big of a franchise. It's not Street Fighter, so I'm sure Capcom was like, let's try this first, see how this does, see how fans react to this, and then, if possible, we will see if we can get out another Darkstalkers game, which, yeah. that would be awesome.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the business model is perfect, right? We're not making a physical disc and having, you know, to do all that production stuff. We're going to put it out for $15 and gauge the market. I mean, they're going to make money on it. And like you said, Andrew, if they do really well, I mean, that's how you determine if you're going to make a bigger game down the road.
Exactly. I think the success of their past re-releases like MVC2 and, like we mentioned, Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, I think that has shown that people are still interested in these older games, even if they don't, you know, they don't hold their attention as long as some of the newer stuff. It's still cool to go back and, you know, see if they hold up. And I think if anything, at least one of those Darkstalkers games will be pretty popular once it comes back.
Yeah, I believe Ono actually said on Twitter or in an interview or something that this collection was a precursor to doing another Darkstalkers game.
Well, let's hope so, because I think a while ago he said that he had a big Darkstalkers related announcement at New York Comic Con. Everyone kind of thought, oh, this is going to be the new Darkstalkers game, but of course we get this collection. Some people are a little disappointed, but you know, again, it's paving the way towards the franchise kind of being continued and revived again. So it's a good time. It's a good time for fighting games, I think, this year especially. So next year, I think it'll be even better. All right.
More. Resident Evil 6 has on-disc DLC, which raised a bunch of craziness about it when that was first announced.
Because we all know Capcom loves their on-disc DLC, and so do the fans, of course. They clamor.
Of course they do. The good news is that DLC will be free.
Yes. So, I mean,
none of us can complain about it.
None of us have played RE6, and, you know, the reaction to that game has been... I'm just going to be nice and say it's been mixed. So it has not been as positively received as previous games in the series, but there are a lot of people who still love it. And I think, you know, this DLC, which I think contains a co-op mode for Ada's story, which is the fourth story in the RE6 that was kind of unveiled a couple of months ago. It's the secret, like, unlockable one, which isn't so secret because they talked about it publicly, but it'll have a co-op mode for that. I think extra costumes and things like that. It'll just basically be, Not anything that's really like extra content for the game, but just an extra way to play through one of the campaigns. And I think it actually unlocks her campaign right from the start, so people who want to, you know, play that first can. But
yeah, it'll also add another even harder difficulty mode.
Oh yes, yeah, because you know if you need anything with RE6, you need even harder difficulties.
Yes, what I find interesting about RE6 is that the reviews they've been mixed, but mostly negative. A lot of the fans I know that have played the game love it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot.
I've never seen that kind of a disconnect between review scores and a game and fans before.
Yeah, I think
got a pretty loyal fan base for sure.
Oh yeah, I think a lot of people were kind of disappointed with RE5, but I think overall it still did really well. Not just in terms of sales, but I think it just was still super popular. I enjoyed it, but it definitely had its problems, and I'm still interested in checking out RE6 down the line, but. It's good that Capcom is open about this stuff now. They're like, I mean, I think this was still discovered before they even announced it. I think people still, you know, looked into it and said, oh yeah, there's this on-disc content you can't access unless you, you know, hack the game. But the fact that they came out and said, yep, we know about it. It's going to be free. We're just going to give it to you. That's pretty cool. And I think since this is probably one of the last big games Capcom will release this generation besides stuff like Devil May Cry, and the next Lost Planet, I think it'll be cool that it's cool that they're kind of saying, you know, we're still doing this, but this time we appreciate your feedback and we're actually going to, you know, release this for people for free, since that's what they demand, and that's kind of, otherwise people would be very upset about it.
I'm
wondering if the Resident Evil kind of horror, I don't want to say the horror genre is dead, but I certainly don't see it sort of being as big a deal as when Resident Evil and Silent Hill first came out on the PlayStation. Do you guys feel the same way?
Well, I think
I can agree with that on, like, as far as console disc releases go, but it still seems to be pretty big in download space.
Well, what I was thinking is the big horror one that I keep hearing about is, like, Amnesia, and then I think the sequel, Machine for Pigs, is coming out pretty soon. Those kind of horror games seem to be gaining steam, the ones where you don't have a lot of firepower and it's not, you know, sort of more action-oriented at all. It's more sort of, like, evasive and really focusing on scaring the crap out of you. These kind of action horror games, you know what, I say that, but then Dead Space was hugely popular, so maybe not.
I think,
although they are toning down the horror for the third one.
For Dead Space?
Yeah. Dead Space 3 won't be as horror filled.
Well,
from what I understand.
I think there's two things that's worth discussing here. It's one that Resident Evil, since 5, I think, even since 4 in some ways, it's kind of veered away from horror. Like, clearly there's still zombies, there's still, you know, creepy enemies and still disgusting things you need to fight, but it's not, it hasn't been really scary. Like, RE5 was not scary. There was tense moments, but it was not scary at all. And from what I heard, what I've heard, 6 doesn't really scare. Doesn't really have any good scares either, aside from maybe some cheap jump scares. But
does it take place in Africa?
What, RE6?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay.
No, I'm teasing. Yeah.
No. I don't think there are any big racism issues involved here.
When I first heard that, I thought no, and I watched the trailer, and then I'm like, well, and then I played the game, and I could definitely see what people were saying, and I tried to be like, no, it's not racist, that's just the setting. But if you try and describe people, like, what level you're on and what you're doing, it's very difficult to sound politically correct. Especially when they brought out, like, the shields and the spears, I'm like, okay, this...
Yeah, here's the thing, though. You can't do a setting in Africa and not have people think it's racist, because the really racist thing to do would be to set it in Africa and have only white enemies.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, it kind of fits, like, people that Capcom didn't choose that story. Like, they didn't just choose, like, we're just gonna throw a dart at a map and then, oh, it's Africa. But that's where kind of, like, the virus originated. It was in Africa. In Resident Evil really Mythos. So.
It is strange that game got so much heat, because, I mean, in how many games are you a white dude mowing down non-white dudes? I mean, almost every shooter, I think.
Maybe.
It seems bizarre that one sort of caught the most flack.
I kind of think the topic is I think it got a little overblown, but I mean, I can see where some people are coming from. But I mean,
going back to 6. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, going back to the horror thing. Like, I think, like, RE6, just from what I heard, isn't scary, but I don't think Capcom really wants. I don't think they're focusing on survival horror anymore. I think that they know that the genre has evolved, even though there are games like Amnesia out there and some other, like, indie titles that focus more specifically on horror. But you see franchises like Resident Evil, like Silent Hill, they're veering more towards action. And even Dead Space, Dead Space has always been action-based, but it, like, 3, I think the big thing that people were bothered by is the addition of co-op, which kind of, when you're playing that game in co-op, it kind of removes any and all tension that series had. But you were going to say something, Jeff?
Yeah, what they all have in common is that the series that move away from the horror are all getting bigger.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty much just straight economics that they know that there are more people looking to buy third-person shooters than horror games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, horror is definitely still popular, just in culture in general, in movies and TV shows and everything, really. So, I mean, it's kind of weird that this genre is so kind of stagnant outside of those indie titles. It's kind of like there aren't any big releases that you can really consider a horror game that don't have some kind of action caveat. So, I don't know. Anyway, long story short, RE6 DLC being free, that's great. Good for people who supported that game at launch, even if some of those people were disappointed by it.
Yeah, you can't complain too much about free DLC. It's just the notion that people say, well, let's just take this extra portion out, so we're essentially charging $70 for the game instead of
$60.
Yeah. So as long as it's free. And even, you know, people don't react negatively to DLC if it's maybe a few months later and $5 or $10 for a new campaign or something like that. That's fine.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think DLC, you know, Gearbox with what they do with Borderlands and Borderlands 2, they just released the first new character, well, possibly the only new character, but for Borderlands 2, and they have DLC coming out, I think, next week even. So they stopped working on the game. They finished the game. They released it. You know, they submitted for certification, you know, and then they started working DLC immediately because they have those people who were kind of left twiddling their thumbs after the game is over. And they're like, well, we could work a new game, or we could just continue to support this game and have content ready. So.
Even when the game is getting close to being done, eventually all that's being done is testing.
Yeah, exactly. So there are all those other people that worked on the game that are done with their jobs. And, you know, there's nothing else they can really add to the game, so they continue to work on new content. So even though with RE6 is like it's on disc, so clearly they had it done by the time the game was ready. It's still, you know, they're approaching it by saying, "Yep, it's free, so no complaining."
It's actually it may not be a bad strategy. So for them, one of the reasons I'm wondering if they didn't release the DLC right away is it's a good way to sort of keep the game in the limelight.
Yeah.
Right at launch. And that's when games sell most of their copies most of the time. So if you have a game like RE6 where it sells, I don't know, 500,000 copies in its first week, and then it might start to falter off, the announcement of free DLC might jack up sales more so than it would if they released it 2 or 3 months later. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think...
You know, it doesn't hurt when you have poor reviews also from a pretty vocal minority, you know, a lot of big sites, so being able to counter with that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think I kind of wonder if this was originally planned to be free when they first, you know, put it on the disc and said, you know, we're going to release this. I wonder if them releasing it for free is their response to, you know, what they did with what happened with Street Fighter Cross Tekken or because of people's response to RE6 in general. I don't know. It's interesting to think about. But
yeah, I mean, the whole reason to put it on the disc is to save on bandwidth costs.
Yeah, that, and so when people want to play online together, they don't have to worry about compatibility patches and things like that.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. They don't have to pay for those compatibility patches.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, you know, it's become a common practice, but I think speaking of the broader topic, I think next generation will start to see less of that. But again, good on Capcom for actually tackling this and not getting as much hate from people. It's good despite the fact that RE6 has been, you know, the reception has been mixed. It's good that they are doing something for the fans that do love it. So anyway, more news.
Well, this news will make Andrew sad and will make Graham sad too if he was here. It's Rayman Legends has been delayed until the end of the launch window.
Yeah.
Andrew, are you okay?
Thankfully, I kept myself distracted with some good games since that announcement, but it's been kind of tough because that was the one game. I mean, there are other games I want for the Wii U, but that was like the game I was going to get at launch. And then, of course, they said, oh, it's not coming at launch, but it's coming a couple weeks after. I'm like, oh, you know, sure, fine, that's fine. I'll have Mario to keep me busy. And now they're like, oh, 2013. And then I cry.
I'm not really that surprised.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they want to probably not release it so close to another super popular platformer that it's gonna sell well.
But... Plus, they have 6 other games coming out at launch.
Yeah, they have enough. I don't think they expect Rayman to be one of the big sellers, regardless of when they release it. But
I know as a Canadian, it's pretty much irrelevant to me. But they probably don't want to push the launch after Black Friday.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. It's kind of sad. Like I think I've decided my two big launch games. Well, my two launch games are going to be Mario Brothers, and Epic Mickey 2, and then of course I'll have Nintendo Land because I'm getting the 350 bundle. But Rayman was supposed to be my third game. It was supposed to be there with me to support me through the rest of the holiday. But nope. Now I have to wait, like, and cry.
You know what I'll be doing during the holidays?
What's that?
I will be finally playing Xenoblade and Last Story.
Well, there.
Yay!
Are you getting a Wii U? Will you be playing them on your Wii U? Or
I will play them on my Wii U.
There you go.
Or my Wii if I get them beforehand.
Yeah.
If nice. I get around to it.
Nice. Yeah, Andrew, we still have to sit down and talk about Last Story sometime. But those are two pretty good RPGs there.
Definitely enough to keep you busy.
Oh yes, you will be occupied.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. I still haven't finished my game of the year from last year, Skyrim.
Yeah.
That might get some playtime also.
Can you really finish that? I mean, the storyline, I guess, but in terms of, like, going for completion? Or
You can beat Skyrim, but you can never finish it.
Yeah.
Well,
at least not on the PS3.
You will never. Yeah.
Well, no. that's true.
Or
you can't beat it or finish it on the PS3. That's ridiculous.
You can barely play it. Oh well. All right, I think we have one more piece of news.
Anyone that doesn't have an Xbox yet can totally get one for cheaper this holiday season.
All five of you.
All five of you can buy one for $50 off.
Yes.
From, looks like GameStop, Best Buy, Kmart, Target, Amazon. So basically everywhere except Walmart.
Basically everywhere that you would want to go to buy games.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a really good deal.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
That's why.
No excuse not to own a 360 now, man. That's, yeah.
I mean, especially since the bundles have things like Halo Reach and Skyrim in them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's really good.
Actually, they have a really pretty good bundle pack out that comes with basically a Halo game, a Fable game, and I think it's a Forza game.
Yeah, all your basic.
All of your biggest Xbox franchises.
All of your basic third-party games right there for you. But I mean that this is cool. I mean it's clear that this is a response to the Wii U launching. They want to get a 250
people
out there with the, you know, it's just gonna have four gigabyte hard drive, which for the people just buying this, for basically everyone who doesn't have an Xbox already probably doesn't care about the hard drive at this point. They're probably just gonna get it for the Kinect and for things like Dance Central and other smaller games for the Kinect.
One thing to note though, the 4 gig console will not be able to play Halo 4.
Oh,
yeah. Because it requires an 8 gig install.
Wow.
Oh, that's bad.
I think it's safe to say that everyone who cares about Halo has an Xbox by this point. Because of the three other Halo games that came before it.
Yeah. And also, I'm always surprised by the sales numbers of the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
Not that people are buying it because it's a good system, but that there are people who still don't have one.
Oh yeah. I mean that it happened. Remember how well the PS2 sold even after the PS3 launched? Like that thing was still selling. Sony was still talking about it at E3, even if it was just like, oh yeah, we have this new bundle for those five people who don't have it, and you know.
Yeah, and then they would sell 100,000 systems to those five people.
Yeah, exactly.
And in the Xbox's case, you know, if yours continues to die, I think I'm on my third or fourth. You have a cheaper alternative now. Although, is it only $50 off the 4 gig ones? They don't have nothing.
Off the 250 also.
Off the 250. Okay, so that's good.
I thought I had heard
it was both.
Just went to the GameStop website. It is 250 off of both.
Oh, nice.
Off of every single holiday bundle.
That's
the one with Kinect, the one without Kinect, the 250.
Oh, okay. Well, then I thought it was just the 4 gigabyte one. That's good. Good. Because now, like I said, everyone who doesn't have a 360, they have no excuse unless they just want to wait for the next system at this point.
Are there any official plans for the next-gen consoles from Sony and Microsoft yet? I hear very little.
Sony insists that the PS4 doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
Microsoft is just not talking about it.
Yeah, that's typical. Like, they won't admit to anything. They don't want to let the other company know what they're planning.
Well, I mean, it's also because, you know, Microsoft still has stuff to sell. They still have, you know, they still have Halo to sell. They still have a new Forza game coming out to sell. They still have stuff this holiday. I'm sure as soon as 2013 hits, we'll see them start talking about the next system.
That's why I think this price drop is. I mean, really, you want to get as many people having Xboxes and playing their games before you announce the next console, because you're not going to make any money off the consoles now, especially with a $50 price cut. You just want to get as many people having them, and then hopefully rope them into the next gen.
That's why the price drops happen. They always try to cut costs as much as possible and have a low margin on them just to get people to buy them.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing here is that they're not changing anything with the hardware. You know, Jeff hit on it. A lot of people, you think like, oh, you know, even going back to like the Super Nintendo and stuff like that, you know, the later ones are, you think they'd be better, but they actually cut corners and sometimes they're inferior to, you know, the regular consoles. But here it's just
it's like the Wii that can't play GameCube games.
Exactly. That's a great example. Let me ask you guys something here. So, in the same vein of the $50 price drop, what do you think the Kinect bundles will look like this holiday season? Now, last year they were $99. I haven't jumped in yet. I've been pretty hesitant, but $50 is my price point.
Oh, you mean just the Kinect?
The Kinect.
Okay. Well, I think it'll probably be $99 again. If anything, maybe a little lower. I don't think we'll see it below $80 or $70. I could be wrong, but I just don't think Microsoft is willing to drop the price that low. But in terms of games, we'll probably see, Fable, maybe? I mean, that just came out. What else is out for the Kinect? Dance Central? Maybe we'll see one of the older Dance Central games. Oh, yeah. Yeah, will that come with the basketball, too?
It does come with the basketball.
Yeah, I was going to say, will the bundle come out with the
basketball? I don't know.
That game didn't sell too well, did it?
3,000 copies.
Yeah.
Yeah, every single person that bought a copy had 20 Twitter accounts, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. That great Twitter scandal.
But the funny thing is, the game didn't get bad reviews. Sure, you have to have a lot of space. It's rhythm and basketball. I mean, it's a niche group. You're looking at, I would enjoy it, you know, but I mean, not a lot of gamers would be really into this. It is really niche type stuff.
Even if people wanted to buy it, not many people would be able to play it, because not many people have hardwood floors to play games on, and you know, you not only need that, you need the space for the Kinect, and then it's probably maybe 10% or less of people who actually own Kinects and 360s.
I have a Kinect, but I'd have to play it in my garage or my kitchen, and that's not happening.
Yeah, bring out your HDTV setup.
Another thing they're doing is they're limiting it to people who live in houses and not apartments.
Yeah, I mean, if you live often, in an apartment,
you can't, unless you're in a really good building, you can't just start dribbling a basketball in your living room because someone downstairs is going to get angry.
Or you have really tolerant neighbors.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to have extremely tolerant neighbors because that's going to be annoying as hell.
Oh, that guy upstairs is still dribbling that basketball an hour later, huh? Well, I guess I'll just have to deal with that.
Well, he's playing the Kinect, so I'm going to let this one slide.
Yeah, of course.
It's really important.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of actual Kinect bundles, I mean, again, I think we might see 80, maybe 70, but I don't think it'll drop much lower. I honestly don't think Kinect's worth buying at this point, because I think next generation, when Microsoft releases their new console, they're going to have a new version of the Kinect right out with it. It'll probably be much better than the one they currently have. So, I mean, unless there's that one game you're dying to play, like unless you really want to play NBA Ball or Beats, I don't think the Kinect is worth it. But anyway, let's move on to all these great new games that just came out.
Games.
That's a good thing for us to talk about.
Yes,
this is where I take over, gentlemen. Welcome to the games section of the podcast. I'm going to start with the guy that I have a beef with, Jeffrey. There's a rumor going around.
There's a Jeffrey
rumor
on here?
Well, that's what? You. I'm just calling you Jeffrey.
Oh, okay.
Jeff, there's a filthy rumor, and I want you to deny it. Please tell me that you haven't been playing Pokemon Black and White 2. Well, Pokemon Black and White. You know what I mean.
I may have.
You may have.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Explain yourself.
I think he's a Pokefanatic.
I want to know what's wrong with
Because I hear
Poke
it's
fanatic.
Outstanding. There's nothing wrong with that. I hear the game's outstanding. I'm just spicing up the game section a little bit. Keeping you guys on your toes.
Okay. I'm a movie star in Pokemon Black White, so.
Henry's just going to accuse us of all these awful crimes now.
Well, you just wait till we get to you, Andrew. You don't know what I have in store for you.
Oh, God.
No, Jeff, tell us about the new Pokemon game. I hear the reviews are just that it's outstanding.
It is. It's a big improvement on the original Black and White, though using the same world map with few additions.
So, go ahead. Sorry, I was just going to say.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, I heard it, this is the first time we've seen a Pokemon game that is like a direct sequel. And is this as much of a step up from the previous, from like, you know, generation to generation? I know, I'm sure it's not as big, but I'm sure it's.
Yeah, it's not as big as the jump from Diamond and Pearl, but
yeah.
I think a lot of that is just that Diamond and Pearl were fairly weak as Pokemon games.
Mm-hmm. So, how is this whole, like, if you've never played Pokemon Black and White, I mean, is this the version to get?
If there are going to be a lot of things that they talk about events from the previous games,
yeah,
and it's not going to be entirely clear,
mm-hmm,
and you're going to have, like, all these characters that know each other from previous game, you won't really be familiar with how they know each other, but they don't reference anything directly that they don't also explain at the same time.
Oh, okay. That's
yes, cool. People. For once, story is important in a Pokemon game.
Yes. So, what are the changes? What are the improvements? What are the new additions here?
Movies.
Yes, movie stars.
Ooh.
I'm a movie star.
Pokemon movie stars. They sparkle.
How does this work? Explain this to me. Keep in mind, I know nothing about Pokemon stuff. I'm very behind in this franchise, so when I say explain to me, I really mean, come on, explain to me. I'm confused.
Jeff, you want to or you want me to? I've been distracted by the movie stuff for a while.
Go ahead.
All right, so after you reach a certain point in the game, you can become a movie star. What that entails is basically you get in these scripted Pokemon fights, and you have to pick lines for your character to say and follow the script. And if you do, your movie can be released to theaters and make billions of Pokebucks.
So that explains the millions of Pokemon movies we've gotten.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So now you're pretty much just giving the directors more incentive to make more of these.
Yes.
Why not?
I have been in 7 movies already.
Wow. Well,
they come out about as often as real ones do.
I believe it. I think there are like 16 now. I don't know. So you still have some catching up to do before you match that number. But so is that actually fun? I mean, is that a fun enough distraction from the main game?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically you can only use their Pokemon at first. Their rental ones is what they call them. The studio's Pokemon, because they're perfectly suited for each scene. But after you've done a movie once, you can redo the movie with different Pokemon if you want. And that can lead to interesting consequences. Hmm. Like if you don't have the moves needed to finish a script correctly, then the movie just goes all off the rails.
That sounds like my kind of movie. So I mean, what is the incentive to keep doing this besides it just being kind of silly and fun? Is there some kind of special reward? You get special Pokemon from doing this?
Not that I've seen. Although I do get lots of lemonades for free.
Ooh. Well,
there you go. That's something.
Free lemonade. Why not?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, okay. So going back to Jeff, like, what else? What else is new here? Is besides, you know, besides the movie thing?
Well, the Pokemon you find are actually from across all of the previous games.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the original Black and White, it was just all new ones.
Oh yeah, didn't it like just start out with new ones and then once you actually beat the game, there's
yeah.
So how many total are there now?
Yeah, I really have no idea. Isn't there like
I'm not sure what the total is now.
Isn't
I
it think they've over 400 at this point.
It's over 600.
Over 6. Well, okay.
Yeah. Oh, over 600. Man, when I stopped playing, it was 150.
back in my day, it was only 150 Pokemon. I was
watching the Pokemon TV show, and they had the Poke Rap or whatever.
God.
What is nice is that they've greatly improved the distribution of early Pokemon. It used to be that for like the first 4 or 5 areas you go, all you'd get is these weak, pointless Pokemon that you're never going to use anyway.
Yeah.
But now, before I even got to the first gym, I had 10 different Pokemon, all of which were a completely different type.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are ones I'm going to use the whole game.
So that solves the kind of the dilemma that a lot, I think pretty much every Pokemon game before it has run into is you just get tired of running into the same Pokemon.
Yeah. You'd run into the same 2 weak ones. You would catch one, level it up as a meat shield, and then get rid of it.
Yeah.
Like 2 gyms later.
Well, that's good at least. I think that probably adds. I'm guessing adds to the variety of the early game. So people who might get bored of the early stuff in Pokemon might find this more interesting.
Are we gonna see a full Pokemon game on Wii U? Do you think, or are they gonna keep it to handhelds?
I think the main series will stay on handhelds.
Yeah.
But it is pretty likely we'll see more spin-off games on Wii
Pokemon
U.
Pokemon Snap 2. Let's make it happen.
I keep saying an MMO Pokemon would be incredible, but I guess Nintendo doesn't want to. I guess they don't want to ruin a good thing, right? Because
I do not want.
Far be it for me to like tell Nintendo how to make money on Pokemon.
No, Nintendo doesn't want to get into the whole interactivity and managing a community thing.
Yeah, I don't think that they appreciate what MMO communities are. I think if they started something like that, that might be like completely shocked. And horrified.
Also, that would require them to know what the internet is.
Yeah, exactly. They still haven't figured that one out yet. I mean, they're doing DLC now, so I mean, they're getting there.
Although I'm probably the only person in the world who does not want a Pokemon MMO. Even if they knew all the stuff that they needed to do to make it, I do not want one.
Well, World of Warcraft just added Pokemon to their own game. So
that's true. They did, yeah.
So there you go. There's your Pokemon MMO.
Pandemon.
All right.
But I mean, I think, like Jeff said, we'll probably see some more spinoffs on the Wii U. Definitely, those are still popular. But I think it's been said in interviews and stuff that people like Pokemon games on handhelds. And they think that they're so popular because they're on handhelds that they're perfect games to play on the go. Which I think has always been true since the very first game. So it's understandable they wouldn't want to move any of those on consoles. But who knows?
I'd have to say a snap too with the gamepad.
Yeah,
would be pretty
man, that'd be great. That's what everyone wants.
Yes, that makes the gamepad completely worth it, even if it doesn't work well for anything else.
I mean, since you said they have like 600 Pokemon now, they could probably just—they don't even need all of them. They could just include half, and you'll have a pretty lengthy adventure to go on.
Yeah,
very cool. All right, well, thank you, Jeff. Andrew.
Yes.
You slimy, dastardly fellow. There are incredibly. Scandalous rumors.
Do those photos get out? I try to keep them from leaking.
Dare we say dishonorable?
Oh. I would say incredibly dishonorable charges.
Well, I have
you
to say,
have been engaging in the activity of playing video games recently, including Dishonored.
I'm guilty as charged.
Guilty as charged! You heard him, everybody.
Someone throw the book at him.
Defend yourself.
All right, well, I think I am not being dishonorable. I have actually been dishonored myself, if I were to follow the game's plot. But, okay. I mean, all right, so I'm just going to get this out of the way. Just so everyone knows, I'm prepared to rant and rave about this game for hours, but I'm not going to despair.
Your tweets made it very clear that you love this game.
Yes. I need to think about it more, but it is definitely... I would be surprised if it is not in my... at least in my top three... When the list comes out at the end of the year, there's a little preview for everyone. It is a fantastic game, and where do I even begin? I think I should start like the basic setup is that you play as a guy named Corvo. He's a bodyguard to this empress of this land known as Dunwall, and she's assassinated one day, and her daughter Emily, who is meant to be the next in line. Is kidnapped, and you are basically sentenced to be executed, and you are everything is pinned on you, and you escape, and you meet up with this group of kind of like rebels in a way that kind of want to take back the empire from these guys who have betrayed you, and doing that you end up basically going on these missions, and each mission you have a different target, and The cool thing about this, I think, first of all, if anyone's ever played, Deus Ex, anyone's ever played Thief, anyone's ever played any game that involves stealth and player choice, this is kind of the amalgamation of all of those. But what makes this great is you have this amazing ability called the Blink ability, which lets you basically a teleportation ability, and it lets you traverse like areas so easily once you get the hang of it. And that is like a game changer. That really, really, really changes things up because it makes, like if you ever play a Deus Ex game, you gotta, climb a lot of things and crawl through vents and things like that. And that can get kind of tedious. I don't mind it, but, some people might find that tedious, and maybe that's what kept them away from games like that. But
fair enough.
With Dishonored, it's like this ability you have right from the gate. I mean, after the prologue anyway, you find yourself able to climb things so easily, able to teleport anywhere. When you get caught, you don't, like, if you're worried about getting caught and not being able to defend yourself, you have many ways to escape. And The big thing about this game is not only that do you have that power, but you also have like the ability to you know, approach all of these different situations, you know, in many different ways. And, you know, unlike Deus Ex, which I'm probably going to keep coming back to, which is a game that's not only about like multiple approaches, but it's also about the choices you make in the game. This game doesn't have any of those, you know, like Mass Effect style choices, but it has choices in terms of how you approach the world. Like, for example, if you want to play lethally, the game will react to that. So when you play, when you kill a lot of guards, for example, and you finish a mission, there's something called a chaos level, and that will either stay low or go high depending on your actions in a mission. And then because of that, you will encounter more perils along your journey. Like the part of the story is there's this plague happening, and there are these flesh eating rats, and then there are these infected people known as Weepers. They're basically like zombies. But the more you kill, the more rats that'll appear, because there will be more dead bodies, and the more Weepers that'll appear because of the rats, the plague will continue to spread. So if you play lethally, you'll have to deal with more challenges, you know, because of that. So you'll have to deal with more Weepers, you'll have to deal with more flesh-eating rats, and it can actually affect the game's ending too. But if you play non-lethally, which is generally how I approached it, it can be a little more challenging, a little, you know, levels can take a lot longer to get through, but it is more rewarding, I feel, and it's also just lets you experiment a little more. Like, for example, I ran into a situation where I fell off a building, I survived, and then of course I fell in the middle of a bunch of guards, and I was like, all right, what do I do? I was tempted to just say, you know, reload my last save. I don't even want to think about this mistake. But I was like, all right, how can I get out of this situation? So one of the powers you have is bend time, which, you know, at first just lets you slow down time. If you upgrade it enough, you can just completely freeze time. So what I did is I used that, and then I used the wind blast ability, which is an offensive power, knocked all the guards aside, and then when the bend time ability ran out, I was able to escape because all of the guards were like confused and knocked on the ground, and I didn't have to worry about killing any of them, but I was still able to use these abilities in conjunction with one another and escape and things like that. When things like that happen and they work, it's the best feeling in the world. Like I probably could have survived that battle with the six guards I was facing, but I just didn't. I was still trying to play as non-lethally as possible. So
Andrew, if you could say Dishonored is a combination of two games, what would you say it is?
I think going back to what I said at the beginning, it's definitely a combination of Deus Ex and Thief. Deus Ex with the player choice, right. And Thief with how it approaches stealth. And I think Dishonored is very reminiscent of the early Thief games, especially. And I really cannot recommend this game enough, because it's basically a game when I played it, it made me realize why I love video games. Like it's one of those shining examples that just comes out, and it's approachable for anyone who may even be slightly interested in it. It has multiple ways to play it, and it has pretty rewarding mechanics that once you actually get the hang of, like the blink ability, it can be just so much fun to kind of go around and just try different things and you know, teleport everywhere, and it's just a fantastic game. And I think this is one of the strongest games of the year, and probably one of the strongest games of this generation. And
Andrew,
I'm so happy that it kind of succeeded.
That's great. That's great. What about for those who don't love stealth? Like, is it a pure stealth game?
No, I mean, this game is definitely rooted in stealth. Like you definitely do not want to get caught. But if you do get caught, then it's not the end of the world. Like I said, you have many ways to escape. And I love stealth games, but I'm not good at them. So I tend to get caught a lot. So if you're not, unlike something like, let's say any kind of stealth game where you get caught, it's basically like a death sentence. This game, again, you can escape, and the combat is great. So if you choose, if you don't, you know, in that moment, we were like, you know, I don't care if I have to kill these guys to get out of the situation, I'm going to do it. You have many tools at your disposal. You have your basic weapon, which is your sword, which can use to like block and parry attacks. You have a gun, which is loud, so it will alert other guards, but it can take out like multiple guards at once, or at least like knock them to the ground. And then you have a crossbow, which is a silent weapon, which is equipped with, you know, regular darts, and then like poison darts, which will put enemies to sleep. If you have enough of those, you can still approach non-lethally. But like I said, if you ever get into that situation where you are caught by any number of guards, there's always a way out. You don't need to resort to, you know, oh, I got caught, time to reload. Unless you really care about it, like not getting caught at all, like not no alerts, then there's always a way out of those situations. And the combat is a lot of fun. Even though I didn't focus on it enough, like a ton, it's still, when I actually had to use it, it was just really cool to pull off some of these different combinations of things.
I think that's the way to do it. I remember the one game where I actually enjoyed the stealth, because I'm not the stealthiest of guys, was Batman Arkham City and Asylum games, where, I guess more Arkham Asylum, but if you get caught or seen, it's a disadvantage, but they give you a lot of options to sort of escape and regain the advantage. I thought that was a really good way to...
Oh, yeah, I mean, in Batman, you can be taken down pretty easily once you encounter a group of guys with guns.
With guns, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but, I mean, I almost never, like, at least... At first, I would, you know, when I first played Asylum, of course, I probably got killed a lot during the early stealth sections, but I got the hang of things, and then eventually you start to learn that you start to get the different gadgets that Batman has, and you start to learn about different ways to counter these guys with guns and get away successfully. And Dishonored is kind of like that. At first, when you first start using the blink ability, when you first start using some of these powers, you will probably, you know, be a little disoriented, be a little like, oh god, there's so much I can do here. It's a little overwhelming, and some of these things I don't understand. But just mess around, just keep trying things out. Just experiment. Don't be afraid to get caught. Don't be afraid to die a few times, because it can be very forgiving, and it can be very rewarding once you're actually able to grasp the mechanics at work.
Excellent. Well, let's move on, Andrew. One more game you were playing, which I doubt you enjoyed as much as Dishonored, because that's a pretty glowing review. What else have you been playing this week?
Yeah, there aren't very many games I've enjoyed as much as Dishonored this year. But yeah, I recently have been playing Dead or Alive 5, and like I said earlier, I am not a fighting game guy, but there are fighting games I do enjoy, and I think Dead or Alive 5, which is probably the first game in the series I've played since 3 launched with the original Xbox, so it's been a while, but it's great, because for someone like me who's terrible at fighting games, who probably will never have the patience to get good at any one fighting game or just fighting games in general, it's a great game to be able to learn the basics very very easily, and It can be something that even non-fighting game fans can enjoy if you're playing with people of equal skill level. And I think, yeah, it's fun, and I wish there was more in terms of the way the game teaches you, because there's this story mode, which is convoluted as hell. If you don't follow the Dead or Alive story, you're going to be lost. And even if you do, you probably still will be lost, because the way the story jumps around is just crazy. But you'll probably, if you're like me, you'll probably end up skipping the cutscenes about halfway through the story mode, because you just want to get to the fights. But
does it still feature a gratuitous amount of, you know what I'm going to say?
Boobs.
Fighting mechanics. Oh, I meant boobs. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
there are a gratuitous amount of fighting mechanics, yes. But the breast physics are still there. They are as weird as ever. I'm not going to go into any more details about that, but it's Dead or Alive. You know what you're getting into, you know?
That's
the kind of thing that, you know, some people might be interested in. I don't want to associate with those people, but that's fine, you know. But if you're looking for just a really cool solid fighting game, this is kind of perfect for you. Like I was saying about the story mode, I think the one thing that bothered me about it was it has these challenges that each fight you get into has a different challenge, and it's basically like, okay, punch 5 times, kick 5 times, block 5 times, and then as the story mode progresses, you know, things get more difficult. But the AI, you know, when you do challenge modes or training modes in some fighting games, they let you design the AI in such a way that you want them to block all the time, or you want them to do this certain move all the time, so you can kind of learn the mechanics of the fighting game. They try to teach you that through the story mode, but the AI is really uncooperative, and by uncooperative I mean they don't mess around. It's not the most difficult AI around, but trying to pull off some of the more complex moves while also trying to win the match can be difficult if you're still trying to understand the basics. So it would have been great if they took those challenges and made them into their own separate mode. Then it would have been cool, because then you can try those out, and then when you actually get to the story mode, when you get to trying those challenges in the story mode, it'll click with you a little more, and it'll be more of a challenge to try to attempt to pull them off. When you actually finish the actual challenges outside of the story mode. But they don't have that, and there's a training mode, but again, not really that helpful if you don't know what you're doing. So I mean, the game's approachable, but it's not like some of the more recent fighting games where they have a ton of different like tutorials and things for people who aren't really experts. But it's still very approachable. I think it's more approachable than something like, let's say, Tekken. Because even just jumping online, even though I still lost a lot, I was still able to kind of get a grasp on some of the basics, and still, I won a couple of matches. I'm proud of myself for that. So
I would be.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the online community for a series like that would be pretty dedicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, to play.
Unlike something like Tekken, where you jump into a match and you probably won't even get a chance to punch the person. With Dead or Alive 5, it's more like, you get matched up with people of the same rankings. So you still might lose a lot if you're not that great at it, but you have a higher chance of finding someone who's closer to your skill level, and you really don't have to worry about facing people who are just going to decimate you without you even like blinking. You're just going to,
yeah.
It's very approachable, and it's just a basic, fun fighting game. There aren't too many options outside of the basics, which you would expect, like an arcade mode, training, the online stuff. But again, it's fun. It's a basic fun fighting game. And I think it's probably the strongest Dead or Alive has been in years. So it's really cool that it exists for people who aren't going to be able to get into something like Tekken or, I don't know, Street Fighter even. So
yeah.
Before we move on, I want to mention Nights into Dreams HD. Unlike Jet Set Radio, actually still fun to play. If you give it a chance,
holds up well, hey.
It holds up actually really well. Some people will disagree with me. I know some people don't like it, but I think it's still a lot of fun. So. Everyone play that game, because I love it. Okay. That's all.
Good stuff. All right. Thanks, Andrew. Next up, we have a real sultry son of a bitch, Brad. Brad, I want you to come clean. I want you to admit to everybody here, all our listeners, that you've been playing NBA 2K13. Is that true or not?
It's true. I cannot tell a lie.
Disgusting.
And I have been playing it too, so it's not just conjecture or anything. I have been playing it a lot this week. I got it at launch, so I can get this.
Listeners, Brad has been playing NBA 2K13. I'm going to shut up now so you can continue.
All right, thank you. So the big story always with NBA 2K in the series is, with no competition again this year, and maybe we'll get to talk a little bit about EA. Graham kind of promised me, Andrew, that we would, because
that's fine.
Last week. But, despite no competition, they keep kind of raising the bar. And, in this version, this is by far the best controls and gameplay and game flow for a basketball game that's ever been made. It's better than last year. And, it's noticeable. Like I said, I've been playing it a good amount this week. And right away I was like, wow, this is really a lot better than last year. I think they made it a little bit more forgiving, too. They cleaned up the fast break. So it's been really cool. Now, the downside is that, sports games are kind of moving towards this, it's called like this My Team mode, and I know that maybe Sean will go a little bit on with this too. So nowadays, like all the rage is, you collect cards or you buy packs of cards and you create like your ultimate team. EA does this all the time, and this is kind of like, it's almost like sports game DLC, right? Because people will pay money to have you, you're paying to win. So the big mode this year that they added is this My Team, which is an online thing where you get cards and you can use certain players a certain number of times. You can, like I said, pay to get other ones. I have no interest in that whatsoever. So from like a single player narrative, the last couple games have been really cool. They had the Jordan one where they had a bunch of different challenges you had to play through, and you had to get the certain stats that he did.
That looked really cool, by the way. I'm not a big basketball fan, but I saw that. What a great idea.
Awesome idea, and really great execution too. Last year they had, I don't know if you guys remember, seeing like you'd play games through the decades. So you'd play teams in like a black and white grainy video in the 50s, and you worked your way through.
Oh, nice.
Greatest team.
Oh, right? That's incredible. Wow.
And none of that is in this game. So that they, you know, there isn't like that key single player type mode. I mean, they still have seasons. They still have franchises. They still have, you know, my player. If you want to create yourself and go through, that doesn't interest me either. I'm more of a simulation guy with that. But so those ones aren't in this game, which is disappointing. But again, they've kind of moved into, you know, they've moved on. It's the those games you can still replay them because of those modes. They're really cool. And the other downside to it too is that, I mean, the instruction manual, you know, I've been playing basketball games for a long time, so you know, I pick it up a little bit, and they did change. They have a new control scheme this year. They're using the right stick to do dribble moves. You know, you can still use the regular face buttons for passing and for shooting if you wanted to, too. And I like the new control scheme, actually. I liked it more than I thought I would. The only thing is just with every 2K game, they seem to get a little bit more complicated each year. Literally like a page full of different post moves, you know, depending on, you know, double right click while you're holding L2 and if you have R2 down too. So this can get a little cumbersome and may not be as inviting for like new people to the series. They may be like, wow,
Is there some kind of mode for people who let's say you're someone who's been interested in these games but hasn't picked one up yet and they decide to pick up NBA 2K13? Is this, I mean, it may not be as new player friendly as the last two, but is there still something there for people who want to learn the basics?
Yeah, and they have a good tutorial mode that's really, really thorough.
Okay.
And the difficulty levels are really fair, too. And actually, I think they've even made them, like I said, kind of more forgiving. And, you know, you play on the lower difficulty levels. Those moves really aren't that important. I don't use them, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't pore over that and study it. You can get away without having to do that. So, but, you know, for someone new to the series, yeah, I could see where it would be a little bit of a roadblock, but there are cool tutorials and stuff. But, I mean, they take a lot of time. And to kind of master the game, I would probably imagine it would take you, you know, a couple hours of tutorials and really have to put a lot of focus into, like, knowing all that stuff. I don't play it online. I did last year, and I the netplay was terrible. There are some things about 2K that was really bad. This year,
was it,
I haven't...
Brad, why was it bad? Was it laggy, or was the setup wrong? Or?
Connection wise and stuff was not good.
Unacceptable at this stage.
I haven't heard anything bad about this year's yet. So that's a positive in regards to that. I think that was also an improvement from what I'd read. I've not played it online yet against any of my buddies.
Would it be worth a purchase even if you own NBA 2K12? Is the upgrade worth it?
So that's a great question. You know,
because with sports games that come out every year, it's tough.
It's tough. I would probably wait until it drops to $40 in a couple of months. I mean, here's the thing with sports games, right? You know, they want to target those guys that'll pay $60 for day one. Look, I didn't get Madden at launch this year, but I paid $40 for it a month after it released. A month.
Wow.
Same thing with NCAA. You know, I was going to play with Sean and stuff, and I waited. Target put it on sale, $40. You know, a month after it's out, so it really dips down. So if you like 2K12, I mean, the controls are really cool, and the gameplay, it is better. It is worth checking out if you have a previous one, but I would probably wait and not spend the $60 if you really aren't a diehard.
Right. And so, they will drop. The prices always drop, right, with sports games. It's pretty much inevitable.
But come Black Friday, they'll be $30, $40.
Yeah. So, I mean, You mentioned you wanted to talk about the EA thing, and you wanted to talk about how, you know, without any real opposition in terms of basketball games, at least basketball games like NBA 2K13, is this showing like a decrease in, are you starting to see the decrease in quality like overall because of this, or you know, what do you have to say about this whole no competition effect here?
It's like an interesting time because, you know, 10 years ago, there would be like 7 different basketball games that had an NBA license. And now we're down to 1. In baseball, we're down to 1. I mean, there may not even be a game on the Xbox next year because 2K is out for baseball. I don't know who's going to fill the void. It's pretty much the show, and that's it, and that's PS3 only. So we've reached a point where the games have evolved to be absolutely fantastic. You know, they have everything you could ever want. There's just no competition. There's one game, and that's it. So that's kind of been a change in how it's gone. And so with EA and NBA Live, you know, a series that, you know, back in the mid-90s was a huge fan of. And, you know, this year they, you know, the last, of course, everybody knows with Elite, they canceled it, you know, a couple weeks before it was going to come out. This year, you know, about last March or so, they had video of, you know, and there had some kind of press stuff coming out around this new NBA Live. Then we didn't hear anything for a while. Then it looked like it was just going to be a download-only game, and then they just scrapped it because, you know, you don't really want to put out an inferior product and absolutely submarine the brand. So at this point, you know, I think that with NBA Live, the best chance is for them to come back in the next generation of consoles and beat 2K to the punch. You know, come spend your time working on it, come out, maybe they come out even with them with that first year of awkwardness figuring out the new hardware, and maybe they get some market share back. But otherwise, I mean, it's just, you know, it was pretty disappointing. I would have bought it. I know Graham was going to too, you know, if it was download only, but it, you know, they scrapped it, and that's really kind of where we are with sports games nowadays. Incredibly expensive to make, and you see a lot of people bowing out.
You mentioned kind of hurting the brand if they released an inferior product this year. But in a way, don't you think that them canceling this game yet again after, you know, they've had all this time to work on a new basketball game? Do you think that in a way has already hurt the brand plenty?
Oh, it definitely did. I mean, whatever they chose wasn't going to do well. I mean, I looked at it was really weird too. So they canceled it, or maybe it was when they announced it was going to be delayed, and they put like a trailer out for it, and it was crappy. You would have thought like you were looking at like a PS2 game. and so then you run into like, really, they were damned either way. You're going to release an inferior product that people are going to, you know, crap all over, or you're going to cancel it. They really couldn't win. I wanted them to just release something just so they could show what they've been working on. But then they decided against that. So, you know, a couple years of development down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. Didn't sit well with the folks there in EA Canada that put this game together.
Yeah. That is a shame. I think they've said that they're working on NBA Live 14. So I mean, I don't know if we'll see that. We might, like, if the new consoles come out next year, you know, we might see that. But
I can't see why they would make it for the Xbox 360. Like, why would you put your resources into a dead console now?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, next year it'll basically be just before the next Xbox launches. So, I mean, I can imagine it's still NBA Live. Like, I think that brand still has a lot of life left in it. So it's still definitely going to do well, even if they don't release it for the next generation. But I think if they have like. If you're right, I think if they have the next NBA Live be like a launch title with the next Xbox and maybe the next PlayStation, whichever comes out first, or whichever one comes out next year or soon afterwards, that would be a good way to get basketball fans to come to the next generation. And if it's actually quality, even if there are problems with it, it shows that EA has a handle on this again, and this will definitely better improve, you know, 2K's game as well, because they'll have to step up their game to get back up to EA standards at that point. So,
and EA's done it before, real quick, so I could turn it to my Canadian brothers on the phone here, or on the line here. You know, because remember the NHL series? I mean, in, you know, back in like 05, 06 and stuff. I mean, I thought 2K's product was tons better, and NHL was not very good, and they turned it around. Right, I mean, now it's, well, and then 2K stopped, but even before that, they became the superior product and kind of, you know, did a good job there.
Yeah, and there'll be a lot of people playing NHL game this year, because with the lockout, then we've got to look to get our hockey fix elsewhere. So, yep, you make a good point.
Yeah, I think up here, NHL actually it sells Madden.
I almost guarantee it would sell Madden.
I can believe that. Yeah.
They use Canadian teams up there, though, right? Instead of, you know, American teams.
Well, we have. I mean, there's the CFL, but my friends really like it. But yeah, I'm not so sure about that one.
Yeah, I have no idea about that one.
It's fun. It can be. I've gone to a few games live. It's a blast. Going to most sports games live are a blast.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we should probably be moving on. Brad, thanks very much for your thoughts on NBA 2K13. Sounds like a good one. Finally, we've gotten to Sean.
Here it comes.
Who has been playing a trillion games this week. And it makes me sick.
At least a trillion.
At least.
I think it was a trillion and one.
Sean, 900
million, 900 million of them were soccer.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Sean, please tell us. Maybe three games you played this week.
Yes, three out of the trillion.
Three out of the trillion. If you had to narrow it down, let us know right now.
I would have to say soccer, and shooting aliens.
not the same game. All three different games, in case you were wondering.
Yes, different games.
Yeah, so
although that would be a pretty good game, I think.
Yeah, man, soccer and shooting aliens in the same game, sure.
Yeah.
So I mean, all right, so let's combine the Pro Evo and FIFA talk just because, you know, soccer. Let's just get down to business. Which is the better game, and which is the one to buy this year, and why? Is basically what I'm trying to ask.
Well, if you are looking for a console soccer game, then you want FIFA 13.
Yes.
Pro Evo is basically a game where you have to go through 50 menus to kick a soccer ball.
Some people really
every love time.
So some people really love menus. I'm just gonna put that out there. A lot of people. There are some people who are big fans of menus. So I mean,
if they love menus and they like soccer, this is the game for them. Pro Evo.
Pro Evo 2013 recommended for menu fans out there. But
if you like to play soccer and you don't really care about the menus, then you want to play FIFA 13.
So what aside from the menus, like what separates FIFA from Pro Evo? What puts it above Pro Evo?
Largely the gameplay and a lot of the modes. Pro Evo doesn't have as many modes.
Yeah.
It does have a slightly better presentation,
mm-hmm.
but the commentators are better in FIFA,
mm-hmm.
and the gameplay just feels off in Pro Evo. I mean, it's accurate, but it feels as if someone, whoever created or did the gameplay in it, knew the rules of soccer, but mm-hmm. didn't really know how to play it or hadn't played it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any of the nuances you really look for in a soccer game.
That is a shame. Because I think, honestly, like I believe it or not, I used to actually play... I never really bought them, but I used to play the Winning 11 games on the PS2. I thought those were fantastic games. And even as someone who isn't a big fan of soccer, just in general, like I actually had a lot of fun playing those games with my friends. So it's kind of sad that since then, you know, Pro Evo, you know, formerly Winning 11, has kind of gone downhill, and FIFA's kind of taken the reins on this in terms of.
It's really interesting because last generation of consoles, Winning 11 was the soccer game to play.
Yeah, exactly.
The FIFA games weren't any good.
Yeah.
But about the time that the new consoles came out, Pro Evo couldn't get its act together. When they changed the name, they lost whatever made it the better game.
Maybe it was just...
And they've been trying to recover it ever since then.
Maybe because they called their franchise Winning 11, they knew they were the winning franchise. But when they changed it, they got cocky. And they're like, well, we can still do this. We don't need to have winning in our name. But now clearly it's not happening.
Yeah.
So I'm speaking to Konami directly right now. Change it back to Winning 11, you'll have the better side. You don't need to do anything else. Just, you know, just change the name.
Especially if you put it on the Vita.
Yes.
Did FIFA 13 come out for the Vita?
It did, and it's FIFA 12.
Oh, just like the Wii, right?
Yeah.
Reskinned.
They literally did nothing except change the teams people are on and the uniforms.
Yeah, I thought it was funny because when the Vita launched, they had just FIFA Soccer, just for the Vita, and that's like, oh, cool, so they're launching with a FIFA game. That's great, because that's one of their bigger franchises. Why not?
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, we're going to release FIFA Soccer 13 for the Vita this year, too. I'm like, that seems suspicious.
Right.
Yeah, what's frustrating about it is that both of them, like, back then, it was like, okay, this is a good soccer game. It doesn't have any of the modes that, didn't have any of the modes that FIFA 12 had, though.
Yeah.
And that normally isn't glaring, because console versions usually have more modes than handheld versions.
And usually...
MLB The Show had every single mode in both. So yeah. it was weird to see that. And then six months later? And FIFA 13 is the exact same game. It doesn't have any of the gameplay additions from 12 to 13. Doesn't have any of the new modes. Doesn't even have any of the modes that 12 had still. Jeez. It has the exact same modes as FIFA on Vita did.
That's awful. I mean, I think when new hardware launches, not just like consoles, but with handhelds, you see those first those first like sports games out of the gate, they're kind of like lackluster in terms of modes, but they still kind of get the core features down that you would expect. So it's kind of sad that they didn't take the chance to like say, okay, this was our chance to kind of like just put this out in the Vita, see how it does. And then with 13, we're actually going to add all the modes back that you care about and make this the FIFA experience on the go that you should, you know, really pay attention to. But
yeah, that would have made it worth getting, because it would have been what you would expect out of a new version.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the FIFA soccer at launch had FIFA 11 mechanics for some reason. And FIFA 13 on the Vita has FIFA mechanics, so it's FIFA 11 again also.
Jeez.
But on the console, it is definitely the best soccer game that anyone's ever made.
Wow.
On a console.
That's hot praise.
Bold claim, Sean. A bold claim.
I have reviewed the last 3 years' worth, I think I can make that claim.
You can, absolutely. Oh, we didn't say that you couldn't.
There you go. We back it up here at Snack Bar Games. There you go. 3 years of past precedent.
Sean is our soccer expert. Brad is our sports games expert, but Sean is specifically our soccer expert.
I better be, since I played a game this morning.
Yeah, there you go.
Still got the headache from it.
One thing real quick on the Vita, and I forgot to mention this with 2K13, and at least FIFA's on the Vita. I mean, 2K, they put NBA 2K13 out on the PSP, but no Vita.
That's weird.
Now, to be fair, 2K12 on the PSP was 2K11. I mean, they even had the Jordan mode still in it. They sold it for $20, too. They didn't even try to like pass it off as being anything new.
They did the same thing with FIFA 13 and 12 on the Wii, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'd imagine that the PS
version of
NBA 2K13 is the same as what just updated roster, same mechanics. They're not going to do anything big there, but they put it on the PSP, so there you go. Still alive and well.
Hopefully next year we get a Vita version then.
I would love it.
All right, so cool. Lastly, probably besides Dishonored, I think the other big game this week is XCOM.
XCOM. Oh yeah, that's the shooting aliens I was talking about.
Does this have anything to do with the recent XCOM game? Because there was a first-person shooter, right?
Oh, it is not that game.
Yeah, it is not that game.
I know that, but this one seems to be more tied to the roots of the classic XCOM.
Yes, it is.
Okay, good.
It's basically Firaxis' attempt to bring the experience of the original games to the modern day without being trapped by the old mechanics. And they do a really good job of that. Basically, I never played the old ones, but I have heard people talk about them in glowing terms. And this is an extremely well-made tactical game.
I mean, I think it's because if you go back try to play the original XCOM, I love that game, but it's just unapproachable. You will be very confused the moment you boot that game up. I mean, you could probably try to get into it, but at this point, you know, it seems like Firaxis is just saying, hey, this was a valuable, you know, really really innovative strategy game for its time. But we want to make this approachable for a new generation, who either people who are fans of XCOM or people who have never approached it but just like these kinds of games, you know. And it seems like, based on what I've heard, they've done a really good job of it.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing to remember, if it's a turn-based strategy game, you can't get any better than Firaxis making it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're the kings of strategy games in general. Like, you know, Civilization, just the series as a whole is always been great, and you know, all of their other games have generally been very 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 good. So XCOM, man, tell me more about XCOM. I want to hear more about XCOM.
Has a really great tutorial.
Yes, I actually put downloaded. There's a demo that just came out this week.
Okay, I saw that. It has the tutorial in it.
Yep, basically. It's basically the first two missions, which I assume those are just the tutorial missions.
Yeah, I think the first three or four missions are tutorial missions.
Yeah.
So it largely walks you through it, but you can, once you unlock an area in the tutorial, you can pretty much go visit that section anytime you want to.
Yeah.
In terms of the base building. But the as far as the tackle stuff is concerned, you have a squad of 4 to 6 soldiers. They are, as they get more experience, they started as green recruits. They have no experience whatsoever. They don't even know what they're good at on the battlefield. As they get more experience by surviving and killing aliens, they level up. And then you can take them through. First, they're given a specialty like heavy weapons or sniping or support. They then have this branching level of upgrades you can and abilities you can give them the more experience they get. It's really interesting because you can get things like the heavy class. The first upgrade is a rocket launcher. Mm-hmm. You can only use it once per mission, but it's devastating.
Yeah.
You can literally collapse a building with it.
There you go. What better way to kill aliens than just explosions?
I know. I used it and I killed three aliens inside a structure by taking down the structure.
Nice.
That's cool. Sean, did you play the original XCOM?
I did not.
The PC one way back? I would like to get someone's opinion on it because I know that game is goes way back. But I remember it getting like huge accolades at the time and is still considered one of the best PC games ever. So it'll be interesting to see. I know a lot of fans were upset that the last one was a first-person shooter, but this one seems to be going back to the roots, but still getting pretty good reviews, so it's nice to see.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if it's as good. I wonder if people are feeling as good about it.
Based on what I've heard, it seems like it takes everything that was great about the original, updates it for modern, gamers, for people who have different standards than when that first game came out, and those games were popular, and kind of sticks to the roots of XCOM. Like you have a squad of people, they will most likely die, you'll most likely be sad, and then you'll have to move on, and you'll have to worry about, managing resources and stuff. And based on what I've heard, it sounds like once you get past the tutorial stuff, it's basically, you have free reign on everything, on base building, on the missions you go on how you upgrade your squad. So I'm sure once you get past the basics, you are basically approaching an experience that based on the demo seems very close to the original.
One of the things that made the original so hard was that there was no tutorial. You basically just got thrown into it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what happened with games back in the day, man. They threw you in the deep end. Have fun. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that? No internet?
That's why like the original XCOM is kind of really unapproachable now, because unless you're like following a guide but
back then came with 200 page manuals.
Oh, true, yeah. So you
PC gamer magazines were 600 pages.
So you had the resources, but it still did not hold your hand at all. And even though the new XCOM has that tutorial for people who aren't accustomed to the series, it still seems to, once you get past that, it still seems to kind of embrace what the original XCOM was and what made it so great.
Yeah, and there's four different difficulty levels if you, for some reason, want to torture yourself with impossible difficulties.
And there's isn't there Iron Man mode, which just lets...
There is an Iron Man mode, yeah.
Which just, I think it's just one save, basically.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that if you lose a mission, you lose your save at that point.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And it's a 30-hour game.
Who are these masochists that play these games on these difficulty levels?
I know some people, trust me.
I know someone who's played Iron Man on Diablo 3 through three different difficulty levels.
Yeah, people love that stuff.
And I just beat Max Payne 3, going off the board here, I was talking to Andrew about it a little earlier. And on normal, that game was a challenge.
Yes,
like, challenging. And there are two difficulty levels higher than that.
So I didn't even want to think about it.
Imagine like free aim on the hardest mode in that game. I would lose my mind. Like going through the game, I could only play maybe a chapter or two at a time because it's so intense. I found it took me a while to finally get good, I guess, at the game. You finally get the hang of the mechanics and things like that. But but it's good because I know people complain a lot about games being too easy these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea, to include 5 or 6 difficulty levels, because there are people out there that'll play it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll usually play one of the lower ones.
Not us. We have to review games.
Yeah.
I still play the lower ones, unless it's something like Civilization or Master of Orion. Those I play the higher levels.
Yeah.
And I remember Civ 2, the creator, said even they get lucky once in a while and they win on. I think the highest mode was Deity. And I think even the creators were like, when we play that, like sometimes we win, but we'll usually get lucky.
Oh, I don't think any of the creators won on Civilization 3 when they put in Cid difficulty. That was higher than Deity.
There was a Cid difficulty?
Yes.
It was in one of the expansions.
That's
I think I remember
that,
that.
I think that was in Conquests. They added that. They added that difficulty.
And I'm really sad if Sid Meier wasn't really good at Civ, but I can see, is he really good? Like, I know he makes the games, but
I'm sure he's got a lot of skills in those games.
I think
one thing about XCOM that I think Graham would be sad if we didn't mention is how much the combat feels like Ghost Recon Shadow Wars.
Oh, that's good.
That is true.
That is always good.
And however, cover is extremely important. If you're not in cover, you're gonna die.
Yeah. And I'm someone. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Just the way it controls with the whole grid based and having your soldiers with different classes, it feels a lot like that game.
And I'm someone who doesn't unless I'm really desperate not to lose someone who just got killed. When I play stuff like Fire Emblem, where you know permadeath is always a risk. Oh, yeah. I am someone who does not really just like keeps going.
XCOM does share Fire Emblem's permadeath.
Here's the good news though. You can always get new guys, and they are very smart about the way they do it. You don't. They all have names. They're all from the different member nations of XCOM. I think there's 12 nations involved in it. They realize that you're going to lose people, so they don't actually give them nicknames.
Yeah.
That they'll call each other until they reach sergeant. So they have to have survived like 3 missions by then at least. So until you will eventually not mind as much when the lower level guys die, but you'll lament it whenever anyone with a nickname dies. Like
Sean,
no
Scarecrow, big question come for back. Me in a game like this: can you name your teammates?
Yes, you can. You can edit them. You can name them. You can change what country they're from.
I don't understand why it's such a big deal with me, but one of the reasons I love games like Ogre Battle 64 is you had this huge army and you could name everybody. And I just have all these units with like all my friends, and I'm like, oh, this is Chris's unit, and this is Fred's unit, and all that. And like,
that just
love that.
In XCOM, that just makes you extra sad when they die, especially with someone you rank up enough.
Up for failure, hey?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh,
like,
Andrew died.
Yeah,
so
all
of a sudden, you have a falling out with one of your friends, and you send them on a suicide mission.
There you go. Yeah, I think Sean, you should create a snack bar unit. Get some of us in there so we can die horrible deaths.
Who's the
I'm
Chinese
terrible
person?
At war, so make me like a medic or a secretary or something.
There's no medics.
There
well,
are
although secretaries. Support troops can use more medikits than anyone else can though. So that
are you
that
telling
might
me there's no secretary position? How about janitor in XCOM?
It's already taken.
Oh, damn it.
I think a robot does that.
Yeah.
Brad took it, didn't he? Brad always plays it safe and smart.
No, Brad's in charge of my Canadian team.
Oh, good. Okay. Oh, we're going to get shit done then. Oh, we're going to get stuff done then. Yeah. Canadian unit? Absolutely.
I do think it's funny that when you first start out with units, they're just basically rookies. And then once they get high enough, rank up high enough, when you could actually give them nicknames, you actually start getting attached to them, and then the game takes them away from you, and it's just like, oh,
yeah.
Damn it.
It is really interesting to me that I like it, the whole progression thing. As you go along, you get more stuff, and you get more money, and you get more support from all the countries. I find it odd, though, that we're being invaded by this alien force, and they're going to dole out in little portions all these things. Like, here, you can have this much money a month, but I'm not going to give you much right now. Or here, take all these rookie soldiers to fight this enemy that no one else can fight.
Same thing. I mean, that trope's been around forever with RPGs, right? Like, we need you to save us from the big dragon. Great. I'm going to buy some weapons in your store. No, no discount. You know, it's a very difficult line to sort of, you know, find like that, right? Like, it's hard.
Yeah. The good news is that you will eventually not be using any earthly weapons anyway. I mean, you can research all the stuff that you recover on the battlefields, and you'll eventually just be using researched alien stuff anyway. So there's no. It's like, well, yeah, you could have given me all these assault rifles and stuff, but I'm not going to use them anyway. So, although I would love to have more satellites. That would be nice.
Keep the other countries happy, right?
Yeah, I mean, without a satellite, I can't tell if you're being attacked. So why don't you give me one?
Money, man, money.
Good to know. Good to know.
So XCOM, so far so good, huh?
So far so good. I've only lost 5 guys.
Yeah, again, people who don't know XCOM, they may seem like a lot, but no, in the grand scheme of things, Five Guys is nothing. You will most likely lose many more.
Oh yes, they have a memorial room you can go into.
Yeah.
And lament the fact that you lost your corporal who was really good at heavy weapons.
It's actually funny. I think some people have started to take them too. Once they've actually finished the game, they look at their memorial and take pictures of all of the people they've lost, count them up, and then they post them online and stuff. So it's cool. And yeah. Kind of depressing to see just how many people have died in everyone's games.
Well, hey, one of the best additions I thought of in Mass Effect 3 was that memorial plaque inside the Norm.
That was amazing. Awesome.
Yeah.
Made me sad looking at it. Yeah. And the fact that they added more players throughout Mass Effect 3 to it.
Yeah, that was...
If you lost someone during Mass Effect 3, they were added to the plaque.
Yeah,
I hate when games don't show their own history. Like, they just pretend that previous games never happened because they're afraid that people that may have not played the first game will feel left out. Well, screw that. You should reward people for playing the first game. So you're not shoving it in their face, but having something like that is genius. It rewards you for playing it in sequence, and obviously you care about your buddies and teammates. It's good.
Indeed.
Indeed.
All right, well, I think that about does it for us today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And for Sean, Jeff, Henry, and Brad, I am Andrew. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter at snackbargames.